I think the transition was relatively smooth. We had experienced crews coming out of the Mercury program that generally were the mission commanders, the commanders that moved into the Gemini program. So then they moved some of the newer astronauts in there. By this time, however, the simulation process had really expanded almost exponentially. We had basically systems that could fully represent the spacecraft systems. We had basically computers, a very simple computer on board the Gemini spacecraft, about a 4K machine. But basically this now provided the astronauts information as to some of the things that were happening to them once they got on orbit. I believe that the real breakthrough in training occurred during the process of simulation, because now we had an instrument that would basically complement the classroom and the learn by doing, because we all spent a lot of time in the factories, working the procedures down at the Cape with range safety and all that. So basically it was a combination of learn by doing, okay, and then take that and apply it during the simulation training process you had.
So those first Gemini missions, including Ed White, what was that, Gemini 4?
Gemini 4.
4. It was the first EVA, but those first few Gemini missions, how successful were they leading up to what we're going to talk about in a moment with Gemini 7?
Well, Gemini 4 was the EVA. I wrote the procedures. Actually, I got a call because that was my first mission as flight director. And Kraft called up and says, are you ready for your flight director? He says, yeah. He says, that's good. He says, because we'd like to do an EVA. Ed White's been in training over in the laboratories over there with some of the equipment they had. And what I want you to do is go over and basically get fully knowledgeable of the equipment he's using, what are the tasks he's trying to do, what are the kinds of limitations they got when you apply it within the spacecraft. And basically it was just to sit down and talk yourself through what you were trying to do and then try to translate that into procedures. We had a marvelous crew systems division with absolutely superb engineers that were providing the hardware. So again, it was one of these things, you know, at that time, risk was virtually everything we did, but basically we became adept and good managers of the process of the missions we flew and basically controlling the risk associated.
What happened with 6 that led to 7 that Frank and Jim flew? What happened with 6 that allowed 7 to happen? Frank or Jim, you want to grab that? Jim?
Well, of course, what happened to 6 that permitted a lot of different things to happen, which was sometimes the way to go, was the fact that 6 was all set to do the first rendezvous. And Frank Morton.
Gina.
Well, Gina, but who was in the 6? Buzzell? Stafford and Sharon, that's right. Stafford and.
I apologize for him, he's getting old.
We're the same age. Anyway, Stafford and Schwab were going up at 6, and the Gina was launched. The Gina was lost, and so they had to recycle. And here's where good management came into play. 7 was going to be a 2-week mission. So can we recycle Apollo or Gemini 6 to go rendezvous with 7? Now, 7 did not have a docking device on it, but can we just, you know, prove out the rendezvous? So that's exactly what they did. We were up for about 8 days, I think, at the time. And then there was a second attempt to launch, and the engines ignited on the vehicle and then shut down right away. Fortunately, Wallace Shaw was a little slow in doing the aborts, and consequently everything was fine. And so I think on day 12 of our flight, 6 took off and did the rendezvous. And so we accomplished that rendezvous by good management and seeing how we can get Gemini 6 up with 7.
You notice that Frank and Jim are sitting next to each other. They broke the record at the time for length of time in orbit, and that was Frank and Jim together in Gemini 7. And Frank,
I would like to know how many people in the audience would like to spend 14 days
in a volume as small as the front seat of a Volkswagen Beetle with a sailor.
I know plenty.
So, guys, describe what those 14 days were like. Togetherness takes on a new meaning, perhaps.
Well, as a matter of fact, we got down after 14 days, and we're on the carrier. The first thing we did, we looked at each other, and we said, we just wanted to announce our engagement.
You said that.
What did the frogmen say when they opened the hatch?
You better answer that.
Well, it was pretty smelly in there. There was no question about it. But Jim and I didn't notice it because we'd gotten used to it and it was fine. But the one thing he didn't mention, I do remember, Jim, that we sang one song for 14 days.
One song.
Let's pretend that we're all together, all alone. You remember that Jim Reeves song? Put your sweet lips a little. I didn't know he was transgender at that time.
You soon found out. You know, it's kind of interesting to get two people so close together and no place to go, no way to move out, that I think either I or Frank lost the toothbrush. It didn't make any difference. We used the same toothbrush for 14 days.
So the mission was a success in more ways than one. It was beginning to sound like a Get Shira night, but maybe it's going to turn into something else at this point. Gene Cernan did an EVA before too long in what? Which Gemini was Gene? 10? What?
Nine.
Nine. And how did that go, Gene? Or who wants to grab that?
Was I think Cernan described it properly. He says that was the EVA from hell.
Yeah. So as a result of Gene's experience, which he used to rest his soul, his description of it really told that story and how difficult it was. But that was a message to leadership, right, that something had to be done.
Well, the key thing was first of all, the task they laid out really didn't fit the experience level that we had in EVA by that time, first of all. Second thing is they had not established the anti-fog compounds they needed to clean that visor because he was virtually flying blind for the best part of the EVA. And the third thing was that we probably should have looked better at the exterior spacecraft because his traverse path back into the cockpit was a lot tighter than we thought. So basically, there was a very strong learning, but unfortunately, we did not really use what we had learned in the 10-11 mission. It was only when we got to 12 that we really understood the nature of EVA and learned to train the crews in the neutral buoyancy environment.
So, Jim, that was your commanding a second flight. That was your second flight, but Buzz, you were the guy that was training to do that next EVA. What was the training process to make your flight a better one, your EVA a better one than what Gene had?
Well, I'll start, but I'll let Buzz finish. There's three, essentially three...
You stayed in the spacecraft.
There are three essential failures. Nine tried. We didn't understand Newton's third law of motion. To every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, which meant that every time that the astronaut got near a big vehicle like the Gemini, since we were neutralized in Earth's gravity, it reacted. And so essentially what happened to Gene Cernan was he got overheated, he really tired to do it. And this also happened in Apollo 10, and Apollo 11. And then there was Gemini 10 and 11. And then there was a fellow, I don't know where it came from, he said, why don't we use water immersion to simulate zero gravity? And so on Gemini 12, and I'll let Buzz tell the rest of the story, because he's the one that actually, in a boys' pool in Baltimore, we were able to sink a simulation of the spacecraft, and we put Buzz in a space suit, which could be just as well underwater as it is in space. We made him neutrally buoyant. We said, Buzz, don't try to swim. And then we went down and looked at various handholds and footholds. But Buzz did all that work to come up and make Gemini 12 successful.
So Buzz?
Bassett, my backdoor neighbor. So an Air Force person was going to fly the number one Air Force experiment. Well, unfortunately, that crew went into St. Louis and a snowstorm, and they crashed into their hangar where their spacecraft was, and both of them were killed.